in Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
In Coos Bay, activists are rallying forces as the Jordan Cove Pacific Connector Project go after their clean water dredge and fill permits.
The fund that insures your bank deposits is running out of money.
And in Pittsburgh, the G20 protests get underway.
Portland area weather today, record high temperatures around Cascadia in the 90s with fairly stiff winds in the gorge. Equinox at 2:18 this afternoon. Tonight, clear, lows in the 50s, and tomorrow, more of the same, but a little bit cooler.
Well, when we talk about activists, plural, in Coos Bay, rallying against the LNG combined forces of Jordan Cove, the Pacific Connector Project, what we're really talking about, who we're really talking about, is Jody McCaffrey. Jody is my guest this morning. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've got a meeting to, you have, there's meetings to go to today, so we want to thank you for joining us. You've been very generous and continue to be generous with your time. Today there is a meeting at 1:30, the Coos County Commission hearing, on this ridiculous golf course rezoning. But there are other things going on, too. I have an email that says, please take the following water body challenge. Let's talk about that first.
Well, yes, the Army Corps of Engineers right now has the clean water dredge and fill permits available for public comment. Actually, the comment period, according to their published notice, was to end on the 18th, but they did promise me that they are going to extend that. And we do need people commenting. This is a huge application. If you printed all the hard copy out, it would probably be like four to five inch binders of material that we have to look through, and we're supposed to comment on this. This is the Jordan Cove LNG import terminal, which includes a flip dock that's a removal of 5.6 million cubic yards for that, plus this 234-mile pipeline that crosses 249 known water bodies. There's more than that of the impacts, but we know over 100 of those have fish in them, and some of them are the threatened coho. So this is vital permits that we need people that know biology and the fishing and aspects to comment on.
Why are biologists being so silent on this? One would expect that biologists who are studying fishing, coastal waters, the problem of warming and not enough oxygen in the water, one would imagine that these sorts of people would have serious concerns and would be looking cautiously at the project. Why the silence?
You know, there we have like the Oregon Institute of Marine Biology that's here and also South Slough Estuary. These people have been silent on this whole issue. I do not know why. You could ask them, I guess, but it's very frustrating because I'm just a citizen. I'm not an expert in biology or fish. I'm having to learn all these issues so that I can comment intelligently on these permits. We had, in 2003, we had a 12-inch pipeline that was placed in our area from the Coos Bay area clear over to Roseburg and connected with the Williams Lateral there. Not too long ago, in February of 2009, a judge awarded $1.5 million for the damage that pipeline caused, and that was not even nowhere near.
That's a 12-inch pipeline, and the one they're contemplating, the connector, is 36 inches?
36 inches is going to be way worse than what the 12-inch did for impacts to our streams, and not just that, but our hillsides, our forested lands. This is a far bigger project. And at that time, part of the reason the judge ruled at $1.5 million that was not nowhere near what plaintiffs were asking, because he said that government oversight was improper government oversight was a factor, that there was actually all parties were to blame for the environmental degradation. But as you see, we have no salmon fishing season the last year or so because of these poor fish runs. Well, that, you know, everything you do to a stream impacts these fish runs, and you know it catches up to you later. And what's the cost of that? I mean, far more than we could ever be repaid.
And well, that's exactly it. We don't have any notion in terms of natural capital of what our environment is actually worth. Jody, that's all the time we have today. I'd like to invite you back again this week and learn the outcome of some of these meetings. And if you could, at that time, let people know how they can get involved and do fill out this form. And this is our coast. This is something that all Oregonians ought to be wildly up in arms about, the fact that they are going to destroy Coos Bay for what, maybe a few years of an obsolete technology. Thank you so much for that. We'll have you back again tomorrow and talk more about getting involved. Again, my guest has been Jody McCaffrey, an anti-LNG activist in Coos Bay.
Thank you.
First, to clarify one thing, Indian trust lands are areas for which the United States holds title in trust for the benefit of a federally recognized American Indian tribe. They may be located on or off a reservation. The Klamath tribes want 385 acres of land along Interstate 5 near Wilsonville. The patch happens to be one of the largest available tracts in the Portland area available for commercial development. Don't think about the word casino, okay? Experts in Indian law say the Klamaths face a high bar in persuading the federal government to take the Wilsonville area land into trust. It's quite a drive from the tribe's reservation in southern Oregon just to punch a clock at the casino. Oops, I said that.
You said the word casino, but they're not going to consider building a casino, no.
No.
At last, the Bureau of Land Management, in its wisdom, is considering a plan that would close 50 additional miles of roads in the Craters of the Moon National Monument. This because humankind is virtually loving the landscape to death. People bring fires, invasive species, and habitat destruction. According to the BLM's plan, 22 miles of road would be upgraded for the benefit of hikers, hunters, and fire suppression vehicles. It was called for in the November 2000 presidential proclamation that expanded that national monument's boundaries.
If you're a human and you'd like to move to Seattle but you don't like the taxes, you're out of luck. Unless you're Bill Gates, of course. But if you're a business, quote, classified as International Investment Management Services, unquote, the city will be happy to accommodate you. The Seattle City Council has approved a business tax change for Russell Investments, which is moving its headquarters from Tacoma.
See, people pay taxes, not corporations, right? How the mighty have fallen. The Securities and Exchange Commission is taking the Bank of America to court over billions of dollars in bonuses paid at Merrill Lynch. You will recall that the B of A swept Merrill Lynch off her feet last year in a warp speed deal that left Wall Street aghast. The SEC said that it will, quote, vigorously pursue its case against the Bank of America, opening the possibility that bank executives could also face charges. The bank said that it will vigorously defend itself. Also yesterday, the Bank of America reached an agreement with the government to exit an arrangement under which public funds might have been used to shoulder losses on risky assets from the Merrill Lynch takeover. We assume that it was a vigorous exit.
Mm-hmm. Here's the scariest financial news yet for the average bank depositor. The fund maintained by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation that insures depositors when banks fail is failing. Regulators may borrow billions from big banks to shore up the dwindling fund that insures regular deposit accounts. Regulators also are considering levying a special emergency fee on all banks, charging regular fees early, or tapping a $100 billion credit line with the U.S. Treasury.
This is a very bad omen, any way you cut it. Well, $100 million doesn't buy a hell of a lot of freedom and democracy in far-flung outposts of the American empire, but here at home, it amounts to 43 American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 awards. TriMet and the Lane County Transit District won funds for technologies designed to reduce global warming. TriMet got $750,000 to replace hydraulically powered engine cooling systems, and Lane Transit won $3 million to cover the incremental cost of hybrid electric buses. Not much money in the greater scheme of things.
Wouldn't it be cheaper just not to taser people? I think the numbers are in. A federal jury has ordered the city of Portland to pay $55,000 to a man shot with beanbags and zapped with a stun gun after he videotaped Portland police officers searching an auto body yard for a jaywalker. Police said Frank Waterhouse Jr. was mistaken for the jaywalker, and officers used force because they thought he could use the camera as a weapon. Waterhouse was acquitted of disorderly conduct and criminal trespass charges in 2006.
So they were really going after a jaywalker, got the wrong person, tasered them anyway, and now they have to pay damages. Huh. It's wonderful. First, this, Reuters has it this way. Rich nations, humbled by a homegrown financial crisis, have made room for emerging economies on the world stage, reflecting a lasting power shift that will be on full display at the G20 summit this week. That's the article from Reuters. Okay. It's true that there's been a substantial power shift, and it will be evident this time around. Protests are planned around the summit, despite the best efforts of state, local, and federal policing agencies. My guest today is Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh, where the G20 summit is going to be held this week. Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Well, so the Thomas Merton Center, you are at the center of a great many of the coordinated protest activities. Can you talk about some of these and what you've been up to in Pittsburgh?
Well, this is a very busy week. We've had organizing going on since they first announced that the G20 would be here back in at the end of May. And everything has really been focused on this week. And so that includes a number of things. There's going to be a really big march. The People's March is going to be on the 25th. That's Friday, and the second day of the G20. And that's going to start with a number of rallies. In different points, and then having a feeder march. Feeder marches that lead into the big one, and that's going to start in Oakland, where we have a lot of schools and universities, and then going downtown to, like, the city-county building and the federal building and the convention center, and as close as we can get to all of those places.
So I think that actually Reuters did nail it this time. There is a huge power shift taking place. Amongst the protesters, what sort of recognition is there of this power shift, that less wealthy countries now have a great deal more clout than they might otherwise have had if it were not for basically Western economies shooting themselves in the foot? How does that affect the balance of power?
I really don't know. It's hard to say, and just looking at the things that they're going to be talking about at the G20, at this summit, I think it'll be interesting seeing how these things play out. And this involves everything regarding, economics and looking at the international economy and how everybody is affected, regardless of, who has power at the given moment or not.
We'll be talking more with you later. We're out of time for today. That was, of course, Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh, where the G20 summit takes place this week. Melissa, thank you for that. I hope you'll be able to be back with us again later in the week to keep us updated on the protests taking place there. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Eric Askadia for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2009. The engineer is Janet Anderson. Trillium Shannon is assisting Kathleen Stevenson, whom we welcome back from sabbatical as the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to All Natural, Free Range, Non-Syndicated, KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Yesterday, the democratically elected president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya, made a 15-hour trek through the mountains to return to the capital of his country. You'll hear interviews with Tim Russo and Andres Contreras in Tegucigalpa.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.